Sue, I forgot to mention your situation in prayer, but we will be praying for you. Okay, let's take our Bibles now, and we will turn to the book of Judges. As Leon Morris, the great creationist theologian, he wrote a commentary called The Distressing Days of the Judges. And we see there the pattern over and over again where there is there was no king in Israel, and every man did what was right in his own eyes. So that meant that, you know, what's all right for you is might be different for me. So there was no standard. And people totally disregarded that standard, which was the word of God. All the way through this chapter, which is the longest to end the book of Judges, we see God working, but we don't see any of the children of Israel asking God for anything. And so it's kind of like the book of Ruth, where we don't see God hardly even mentioned now. The writer does or mention that God does do a couple of things here, but it's underhand. He's not doing it directly with any one person. And so we see that, and as a result of the cultural bondage, they were under bondage both culturally and, of course, as a result of that, militarily. And as we see the cultural bondage of our country today, where we're getting into sins and we have such an appetite for sin that I'm not sure we can turn away from it. I mean, we are so wrapped up in the immorality of our entertainments, of the pleasures of the flesh and so forth, that we are addicted to sin. And how difficult it would be to come back out for us to have a revival with all the things that are going on today. But let's turn now to Judges chapter 9, and we're looking at a man named Abimelech. Now, we were introduced to him back in chapter 8. He was Gideon's son, and Gideon had several wives and a concubine, which was kind of a slave girl, I guess what they call it, a slave with privileges or whatever. But here he had a son through her. And his name, as we see in verse 31, was Abimelech. Abimelech means my father is king. Now, as we've said throughout the Bible, in the Old Testament especially, and we talked about dominion this morning, how many times the children were named by the mother. And so and of course, naming of a child or naming in the Bible showed that you had power, that you had authority over that person or dominion over that person. And for instance, whenever Nebuchadnezzar came in, he changed Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. He changed their names to what? Anybody remember? Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. What was their name whenever Nebuchadnezzar changed their names? Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. And so he changed them into the names of Babylonian names because he had the power. They were slaves, so he changed their names. And he even changed Daniel's name, too. But we see that she named her son, and he probably grew up around Shechem because this is the prominent city that we're going to see here. And he had a lot of his friends and a lot of people around there. Now, notice what happens in chapter 9. Then Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, which was Anti-Bel, remember that was another name for Gideon, went to Shechem to his mother's brothers. Now remember, she's a concubine. His mother was a concubine, and she lived in Shechem with a lot of her family around. So she was kind of a woman that lived with her family, but then would be with her husband for a while or whatever. So she was kind of she was always a tweener, you know, as far as what she could do. As far as we see that Gideon was very wealthy. He refused being a king, but he lived like a king. Remember all that gold that he kept and so forth. And so notice he went to the house of his mother's father, saying, "Please speak in the hearing of all the men of Shechem, which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Jerubbaal reign over you, or that one reign over you, remember that I am of your own flesh and bone. Now, you know, I know I'm the low man on the totem pole, and I know that I'm just, you know, not much, but I am your brother. And do you want those other guys to have all the privileges? Remember, they got all the gold and everything from their daddy. Hey, we might be able to chip in on that. And so why should these people have any influence over us? And his mother's brethren spake to all the world, spoke all, and his mother's brothers spoke all these words concerning him in the hearing of all the men of Shechem. So they had a big city council. And the heart of, was inclined, their hearts were inclined to follow Abimelech. For they said, he is our brother. Notice here again, that kind of, and again, we see this situation, I've said several times, where God did not condemn expressly in the Word of God Gideon's multi-wives and 70 sons. But we see that he condemned it by their actions. And we see the huge problems that is caused by polygamy. And so, folks, we are having all these things today where marriage has been totally broken down by the Supreme Court. And we're hearing about, what do they call them, thruples and all these different terms that they're using about how that you can have more than one spouse and all these things. That is just a sowing of confusion. And then we have people, there's a football player out there that he's got 10 different baby mamas. I mean, how great. And in other words, 10 women that are not his wife that has his children. I mean, what he's saying there is, I got enough money that I can have the beautiful girls and even afford to have children through them. Well, that's what, when you have 70 kids, you got to have a little bit of money, you think? How many of you have a couple of kids and you wonder how you're going to make it back or whatever? And so it is. We see that when you have 70 and they can live pretty well, then you're showing it's kind of like living in a big mansion and driving fancy cars. That would be kind of in this agrarian society that they lived in. And so, and they said, he's our brother. So they gave him 70 shekels of silver from the temple of Baal Berith. Now, here we see that the influence of the Canaanites, and many people believe that this concubine was a Canaanite, and many of the people around were Canaanites. But here in this false temple to a false god, Abimelech hired worthless and reckless men, and they followed him. So he had enough money to pay for some paid murderers. And then he went to his father's house at Ophrah, which is about 10 miles away, and killed his brothers and 70 sons of Jerubbaal. Now, when you see that, okay, there'd be 69 if there were 70 children altogether. But the Bible, the Hebrew, has a strange way of numbering many times. And you'll see that the book of Acts says, and they gathered with the 12. Well, there were only 11 after Judas was put away, but they still called them the 12. Well, here you had the 70. And so you'll see that several times in Scripture, especially talking about Jews, where they'll keep the number up, even though there might not be. It's kind of like the Big Ten Conference. I think there's 14 teams now, but they call it the Big Ten, whatever, to keep the identity there. And so we see that they killed the brothers, the 70 sons of Jerubbaal, on one stone. Now, that's going to be interesting because we'll see a stone is very prominent at the end of the chapter. But Jotham, so actually there was only 68 brothers that were killed, because Jotham, the youngest of Jerubbaal, was left because he hid himself. And all the men of Shechem gathered together at Beth Millo. Now that would have been the tower that was there. That'll play prominently again. And they went to Abimelech, the king, to the Taberith tree, or the oak tree, or the tree there, at the pillar which was in Shechem. Now, this is the very place that Joshua had placed a copy of the law. So you can see how far the total disregard for the law, a total giving themselves over to the hedonism of these temple worshipers. We'll see them even as a worship in a few moments. But we see the utter disregard for God. And so, but Jotham gives one of these, and you'll see this through Scripture, kind of a riddle poem. And the Hebrews were good about this. They would talk about certain things. It's kind of a parable poem. And he wants to come to a point. And so we see, listen to me, Jotham now speaking. And he's speaking from the very place here at Mount Gerizim, which was where Joshua spoke to the people before, after they had conquered Jericho, as they were going into Jericho and conquering the land. So these places were all very prominent, but look how that they had been degraded by the sins of the people. Listen to me, you men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went forth to anoint a king over them. And they said to the olive tree, reign over us. But the olive tree said to them, should I cease giving oil, which they honor, which they honor God and man, and go sway over trees? So then he said, the trees said to the fig tree, and same thing happened. Should we give up our fruit and go and hold sway or rule over the other trees? Verse 12. And then he said to the vine, come and reign over us. And the vine said, should I give up the wine in order to do it? So we see that these three classes of people, these three different groups of people, and actually trees here, he's using them. And remember those poles and those trees. So many of them were worshipped, and the groves and so forth. And so he's talking as if these were gods. And they're saying, no, we don't want to reign over them. But then he says a bramble. Notice in verse 14, then all the trees said to the bramble. And a bramble is just an old, it was a very dried up vine with a lot of thorns on it. It didn't grow much. It wasn't good for wood. The only good thing about a bramble was to throw it in the fire and it could give you a very quick combustion so you could put other logs on top of it. So it was good kindling wood. That was about it. But and so it was worthless. But he said, and so he says, and then all the trees said, reign over us. And the bramble said to the trees, if in truth you anoint me as king over you, then come and take shelter in my shade. You have to really crawl down to get under an old thorn bush. He says, in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. And fire is going to come. And this is kind of prophetic because, yeah, the bramble is going to create a fire right there in Shechem. And then, therefore, Jotham is still speaking. He says, now, therefore, if you have acted in truth and in sincerity in making Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal or Gideon and his house, and have done to him as he deserves, for my father fought for you and risked his life. Now listen, if you think you've done good, don't forget that my father was the one who fought for you and delivered you out of the hand of Midian. But you have risen up against my father's house this day and killed the 70 sons on one stone. Now, for one thing, you see the blood and the gore that's all the way through this, oh, yuck moments that we talk about over and over again in the book of Judges. I mean, blood just flows. And the one thing that God said over and over again, he said it in Deuteronomy. He says it in Proverbs, these six things that God hates, seven are an abomination to him, a proud look, a lying tongue, and feet that shed innocent blood, or hands that shed innocent blood. And we see that Habakkuk says, woe unto him that sheds innocent blood. That's referred to in Isaiah, in Jeremiah. I mean, they all preach against the shedding innocent blood. And so, and God will not hold him innocent who sheds innocent blood. And so we see that this is one thing that God hates, and yet we see 70 innocent men have been killed. Well, there's going to be a lot more innocent people killed before it's over with. And we see, if then you have acted in truth and sincerity, Let's go on down to verse 20. He says, "But if not, then let fire come from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem and of Beth Millo. And let fire come from the men of Shechem and from Beth Millo and devour Abimelech." So let's have a war. Okay, who's going to win this thing? And Jotham ran away and fled and went to Beer. So we don't know exactly where that is, but he didn't have a beer. He went to Beer. So that means well. And dwelt there. And the fear of Abimelech, because of the fear of Abimelech. So he caused this problem, but he knew that Abimelech could kill him just like he'd killed his other brothers. So he went kind of as a fugitive. And after Abimelech had reigned for 3 years, so he'd been in hiding for 3 years now, and things have settled down, notice what God does. God stirs it up. This is the one thing that we see, that God works behind the scenes, but we don't see anybody appealing to him. God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. So after they had sided with him, now God causes the people of Shechem that had sided with him to make him king. Now they get agitated with him. God raises up one and casts down another. It's interesting. We talk about pirates or Jesse James or a den of thieves. They usually turn on one another and they eat their own. And we see this is exactly what's going to happen here. And God sent an ill will. And how many times is it because God does something actively? Whenever the very people that shed innocent blood turn on one another. And so they sent an ill will between Abimelech and the sons of Shechem. And the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. Now, wait a minute. They just made him 3 years earlier. They'd made him king. Now, not over all of Israel. He didn't reign all over all Israel. That's a word there, meaning basically in verse 22, when he reigned. He didn't reign over all Israel. He just had that little pact there. It was kind of like he had great influence over Israel because of the location. All these trade routes that flew right through Shechem, which was east of Jordan. That whole area there had toll roads and so forth, and he can make a lot of money. And then we see that playing into that. And so they turned against him, and the crime done to the 70 sons of Jeroboam and the men of Shechem, and aided them in the killing of his brothers. Verse 25, "And the men of Shechem set men in ambush against him on the tops of mountains, and they robbed." So here all these people are coming through, and now they're raiding the very caravans and the different trade routes that are coming through that very influential part of the country, that kind of bottleneck of trade. And going down to Jerusalem in the south and going up north to Greece and across from the Mediterranean to across the Jordan. And so that was a very vital area. And so there would be many toll roads, and that's where those countries would make a lot of money. That's where Solomon made so much money during his day. And so we see that they were raiding and they were setting ambush against the very people now where Abimelech was making his income. But now we were introduced to a guy named Gaal, the son of Ebed, who came with his brothers and went over to Shechem, and the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. So now they've changed their loyalties from Abimelech to this man. But we're going to see that there's a guy named Zebul, who is still loyal. And there's going to be a great conflict that God allows. And so we see in verse 26 that Gaal said to his brothers, with his brothers, and went over to Shechem. And the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. So they went into the fields and gathered grapes for their vineyards and trod them and made merry. And they went into the house of their God. Notice they're going to let's go have a good worship service. And notice how they worship. And they ate and drank and cursed Abimelech and Gaal. Then Gaal, the son of it, said to Ebed, "Who is Abimelech and who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Zerubbabel? Is not Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor." Hamor, okay, was one of those Canaanite cities where they did not drive them out. The father of Shechem, why should we serve him? If only this people were under my authority. So Gaal is saying, if these people, they all get drunk and they start talking about how you be under my authority and we'll take care of Abimelech. And then he said, then I would remove Abimelech. So he said to Abimelech, increase your army and come out. Come on, let's fight. So in this drunken stupor that they had in the God, he's ready to fight. And he's ready to say, hey, listen, we'll take care of Abimelech and get rid of this house of Gideon once and for all. And so he's ready. He's spoiling for a fight. But Zubal, notice, he was. They knew that he was loyal to Abimelech. But when Zubal, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, and the son of Ebed, his anger was aroused, and he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly, and said, "Take note, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his brothers have come to Shechem, and here they are fortifying the city against you. Now you've been out with your." To another city, and you really haven't made Shechem your capital, even though that's where you started. And they turned against you, and now they're daring you to come and fight them. Now, therefore, get up at night, you and the men who are with you, and lie in wait in this field. And it shall be that as soon as the sun is up in the morning, that you shall rise early and rush the city. And when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you shall then do to them as you find opportunity." So these men aren't ready for a siege. And so they're going to come out to fight you. And so just wait for them and there'll be a signal and you can take care of them. And then he goes further. So Abimelech and all the people who were with him rose by night and lay in wait against Shechem in four companies, four different sections. Now when Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance of the gate, so he's out there looking, seeing what's going on. And don't forget, it's Mount Gerizim's off to the side. And Abimelech and all the people who were with him rose lying in wait. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, okay, here Gaal is the leader, and he's saying to Zebul, look, these people are coming over the tops of the mountains. Where are they? And good old Zebul says to him, oh, really, that's just shades. You really can't tell that those are men out there. It kind of looks like movements. Your eyes are tricking you. And so that gave Abimelech's men plenty of time to set up. And so Gaal went again. And so you see all the people are coming down to the center of the land. And another company is coming from the diviner's Tiberith tree. There's that tree again. And so they made it into a place of divination. Then Zebul said to him, where indeed is your mouth now? Hey, listen, the big talk you had, come out and fight us. And now you're a little afraid. Now, from going from deceit to now challenging him. Where's your mouth now? Which you said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these people whom you despise? Go out, if you will, and fight with them now. Now, here, Zebul is showing his true colors, okay? They're here, so you said you'd fight them, so let's see what you can do. And so Gaal went out, leading the men of Shechem, and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him and fled him, and he fled from him, and many fell wounded to the very entrance of the gate. Then Abimelech dwelt in Aramah, and Zebul drove out Gaal and his brothers so that they would not dwell in Shechem. So here they're driven out of Shechem. And it came to pass on the next day that the men went out of the field, and they told Abimelech. So he took his men and divided them into three companies and lay wait in the field and said, oh, the problem's over with. So the people of Shechem are feeling good about it, feeling their oats. And he looked, and there were the people coming out of the city, and he rose up against them and attacked them. Then Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood in the entrance of the gate of the city, and two companies rushed upon all that were in the fields and killed them. So you had the people, you had two companies going into the city and two that were killing the people taking care of the fields. These walled cities would have their wall, but then, of course, their acreage was outside. And so they would go out, and many of them were caught out there. So Abimelech fought against the city all day, and he took the city and killed the people, more innocent blood, who were in the, and he demolished the city and sowed it with salt. Now, whenever you see a city sown with salt, and this happened several times, in the Ur of the Chaldees, one of the things that gave rise to Nebuchadnezzar was the Assyrians were so harsh that when Ur, the city that Abraham came from, rebelled against the Assyrians, they went in and skinned people alive, killed them, and then they sowed the city with salt, Al, you're a good farmer. What happens if we took a bunch of salt, or we had a tractor go out there with a big, whatever they do with one of those, and instead of sowing seed, they would sow salt? How long, what would that do to your fields? Yeah, they're gone. They're gone for generations. And this is exactly, it would take over 100 years for this to come back, a couple of centuries, before Jeroboam would rebuild Shechem. And so, and this is what happened with the Ur of Chaldees, with the Assyrians, was they sowed that city and they completely destroyed it. And we don't even hear about it. It was one of the wealthiest cities of that time, but it ceased to exist. That was one of the things that made the Chaldeans so upset. Sooner or later, dictators and vicious people overstep their bounds, and you get people so mad that they don't care about their lives anymore, they're going to kill you. And this is what happened with them, with the Assyrians. But notice in verse 46, so when all the men of the tower of Shechem, so here we have that tower, and this is where they would rush to as a place of last resort. And they would pray that maybe other things would draw the army away. They would have, this would be where the wealthy and the leaders of the city and their children and so forth would go into this great tower. And they would be able to fend off people because they were standing up above, and they would have plenty of arrows and ammunition to take care of these people. This is the last bastion of the city. And they entered into the stronghold of the temple of the god of Bareth. Notice they're entering this tower. And it was told Abimelech, and all the men of the tower of Shechem had gathered together. I wonder if Zebul was in there. We don't hear about him. But I wonder if he'd already been killed or if he was up there in the tower. And then Abimelech went to Mount Zalman, and all the people that were with him. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down some boughs from trees, some good old wood. And he took it and laid it on his shoulders. And he said to the men with him, "What have we seen? What you see me do? Make haste and do as I have done, or go down and do likewise." So each of the men likewise cut down his own bow and followed Abimelech. So here you have a lot of people, a lot of men, carrying not just one shoulder of wood, but hundreds of men are carrying many shoulders or many pounds of wood or cords or whatever you want to call it, and put them up against the stronghold and set the stronghold on fire above them so that all the people of the tower of Shechem died. They probably died from smoke inhalation. And so they just piled all that wood around the tower, and they killed the people. And notice about 1,000 men and women. Is it getting bloody, folks? It's getting pretty bloody, isn't it? We see the cruelty of men, and we see the how that they played for keeps. And folks, that's exactly what's happening today. It always has been true over in that area. It's kill or be killed. And if you don't wipe them out, they will, in another generation or two, rise up and try to wipe you out again. And like we said last week, if the Jews weren't there, then they'd be fighting one another. And that's one reason you never heard much about the Middle East until the Jews moved in, because they were fighting one another. and you didn't, none of them could really gain a stronghold until they were united against the Jews. And so, again, we see that this is very true even today. And so, we see now in verse 15, then Abimelech went to Thebor, and he encamped against the Thebes, which was another town that was in his realm, but they had turned against him too, and took it. And there was a strong tower in that city, and all the men and women in all of the city fled and were shut themselves, and they went into the top of the tower. So Abimelech came as far as the tower and fought against it, and he drew near the door of the tower to burn it with fire. But a certain woman dropped an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and gave him a splitting headache. No, it says crushed his skull. That would be these, they would be the big millstones that the ox would, it would take an ox to go around and around. And then there were those household millstones where the women usually would make, would grind their bread. And these things could weigh as much as 20 to 30 to 40 pounds. And so she probably had a 30 pound millstone. And that's not much, but when you're dropping it from a tall tower, you don't want to be hit with it, do you? But notice it came down and hit him. Now, remember earlier, Ziba and Zalmunna did not want to be killed by a child. And we saw earlier where Sisera did not want to be killed by a woman. And here we see that that the shame of Abimelech, he would have rather died by another soldier than by a woman. And he would much rather die by the sword as a warrior than from a toaster thrown by a woman, you know, basically today. And so, again, this was an ignominious way of dying. And so it was really kind of it really, in the eyes of those people, it made him look, he didn't die valiantly. He didn't die with his boots on, let's put it that way. And so then he called quickly, and the young man, his armor bearer, and said, draw your sword and kill me, lest men say a woman killed him. So the young man thrust him through. Here we have a kid, though, thrust him through, and he died. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, that they departed every man to his place. What a horrible story. Boy, wouldn't it be good to have, and then they lived happily ever after. But we don't see it. We see the degradation just going down and down and down. These people keep turning away from the Lord. Thus the Lord, this is where just a couple of times in the whole chapter, God repaid wickedness of Abimelech. Now, we could say Abimelech came from some bad backgrounds. Yes, his mother was a slave girl, and his father probably didn't give him a whole lot of help. But he shed innocent blood. And folks, we better be very careful with that idea of shedding innocent blood. We better be very careful when it comes to abortion. What is innocent? When does life become? We better pay very serious. And I know different people think of different things. But what we do know, that once a child is born and it's laid on the table and the governor of Virginia, former governor of Virginia, says, we'll keep them as comfortable as possible until they die, then that's shedding innocent blood. And so we see that this is more. I mean, we better be very careful. And if you really wonder about when life begins, don't forget there was a little 6-inch baby that was about maybe 4 ounces, 5 ounces along, and he was filled with the Holy Spirit, and his name was what? John the Baptist. And so we better be very careful about this matter of abortion and just saying, oh, it doesn't really matter. Even Bill Maher this past week said, I recognize it. Bill Maher is one of those famous liberal comedians that I don't watch him, but he pops up all the time in different news about him saying so. He must be very influential, makes a lot of money. But he said, I recognize it as a murder, but I can live with it. Well, you might be able to live with it, but what does God think about it? And so, again, we see that. Then we think about what's going on in Washington and all the people that just disappear. When Monica Lewinsky back in the 90s, and then the woman that accused our present president with molestation, she fled because those girls know, working around those offices, that many of them disappear. They just, especially if they never get any notoriety, they just disappear and the media never covers it. And then you think about Seth Rich, a man that they just pulled out a gun and shot him in the back of the head. And for some reason, the FBI, now here he's a high government official, but many of them were thinking that he was feeding information to someone, to a Assange or whatever. But the FBI, CIA, the police departments there in Washington, nobody even investigated it. It kind of makes you wonder what happened, doesn't it? And you hear of these things over and over again. One of our former presidents, it's been totaled that over 35 people have died very strangely around them from suicide. So it's one thing you don't want to do is cross that man because you might want to be committing suicide. All these different things. We got some very vicious things going on in our country today. And folks, we better pray for our country. And especially those in Washington and those over us. And you think about the mafia and you think about fentanyl and all these cartels and innocent people that are being slain across our country. And even the government is either turning a blind eye or even promoting it. And God will not, he will hold them accountable who shed innocent blood. And we must be careful, like the people of Shechem. The people of Shechem put Abimelech in power, and they paid the price for it. And we must be very careful about praying about the people we put in power. But notice that then God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which had done to his father by killing his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem, God returned on their own heads. Remember what we said this morning? God will repay. God will repay. And on them came the curse of Jotham. Remember Jotham said that they would be cursed. And the son of Jerubbaal. And after after Abimelech, there arose to save Israel Tola, the son of Pia, and Dodo. That's a good name. How'd you like to have a name like Dodo? A man of Issachar, so we know there were others, and he dwelt in Shimez, which was in the mountains of Ephraim, and he judged Israel another 23 years, and he died, and they buried him. And then we see the next one that comes along, and we have another man here that comes from an illegitimate birth. He was the son of a harlot, and his name was Jephthah, and he is one of the most controversial judges in all of the Bible. Now, I preached on this one time, and I got a man so incensed that he met me at the back of the door, and he argued with me, and he wouldn't let me shake hands with other people because he said I was wrong about what I thought about Jephthah and his daughter. And so this is one of those that really raises the hackles of a lot of people. There again, the confusion that is caused when we fall into sin. And you see now these two men, two judges, two prominent judges. We see those that are in between, and God talks about these men who come from bad marriages, from immorality, from polygamy, and how that he doesn't condemn it openly. He didn't say that Jephthah's parents sinned, but he just shows, just like he did with Zerubbabel, that Gideon sent, and it was passed on. And then it gets into the shedding of innocent blood. How sad that is, that we see that immorality brings on death, and immorality brings on, and you'll read in the book of Hosea, in the book of Amos and others, where when people turn away from God, they turn to sin, but then they turn to extreme violence. and you see blood runs in the streets. And again, we see that there was no king in Israel, and men did what they wanted to do. And when men do what they want to do, then it leads to cultural bondage and killing of themselves, one against another. But oh, that God has given us grace. And oh, where sin abounds, grace does much more abound. God, forgive us of our sins and use us. But as a church, you know, we're the hope. What we say here, we're the hope of the United States. Oh, that God could use us to point people to righteousness. Let's take our Bibles and let's turn to hymn number 251.